This would be our last story of the night. It's a two-part story. I'll try to make the transition between the parts as seamless and as painful. Painless. Sorry. It's a Freudian slip. Seamless and as painless as I possibly can.
So last story of the night.
Yeah, last story of the night. And it's called... Are you ready?
Yeah.
It's called Satan in Love. Part number one, the theory. We'll start from the theory. Painful to artists. That nothing can be created or destroyed. Only changed. And we will apply this theory to the question of souls. The one serious sticking point in the idea of reincarnation has always been the limit that the theory places on the number of souls that can be in existence at one time. The obvious reductio is the number of people who buy books with pastel covers and lots of bullet-pointed lists, and who decide on the strength of these books that in a past life they were more important than they are in this life. Napoleon or Julius Caesar for boys, and Cleopatra or Elizabeth I for girls. Imagine a map with individuals marked by the preferred reincarnated forebear. Would you find that Caesar's thousands of fragmentary soul descendants find certain cities more appealing than others? Perhaps they tend to cluster in San Francisco or Pittsburgh. Perhaps in every incarnation, Elizabeth I prefers to attend Smith College or Sarah Lawrence. This could be a thesis for one of you. But reincarnation is usually and unnecessarily thought of as linear. Cervantes died in 1616. He must therefore have been reincarnated after 1616. Suppose that you were born on the same day as James Joyce. This bears meaning for you. But couldn't it equally have been said that James Joyce was born on the same day as you? That from your failed life, James Joyce extracted the lessons required to write Portrait of the Artist in Ulysses? That the literary destiny granted to you by your birthday, and therefore your shared soul, will be fulfilled by the person who, from your point of view, has already fulfilled that destiny? There is no reason that the soul should obey the linear flow of time. Kant divided the world into noumenal and phenomenal. We perceive the world in the latter way. As being corporeal beings, we must view it through the lens of matter, continuity, and time. Once the soul leaves the body, it leaves behind this lens, unable to see the road, it wanders into the ditch where it wants. What do you think about that? We'll change pages. Thus, a soul at any point in space and time could be reincarnated as a soul at any other point in space and time. But here we encounter a problem. In a normal view of time, every human has a unique soul, and souls can enter and leave the continuum at will. The number of souls is the number of people throughout eternity, hopefully an infinite number. But say that not every person has a unique soul. You now have half as many souls as you have people. Arguably, half of infinity is still infinite. You may take that up with your math professors, but apply the reductio! Suppose that every soul is reincarnated three times, making four people for every soul. 20 times! 1,000 times! 1,000,000 times! Why not 1,000 souls and infinite people? Why not 100 souls? Why not one soul? One soul created 1,000,000 years hence, reincarnated 1,000,000 years ago. In its turn, it is James Joyce. It is Ayn Rand. It is Tao Lin. It is Miracle Jones. The theory is at once monstrous in its narcissism and striking in its humility. All of humanity's accomplishments and all of its sins, they are the work of one soul. Your soul, if you think about it. Learning in every incarnation, we hope approaching perfection somewhere in our future and our past. You lot in the auditorium listening to me, you are listening to yourselves. You are lecturing to yourselves. Some of you think this is senile nonsense, and some of you remember delivering this senile nonsense fondly. Some of you remember how much you hate the fucking sight of yourselves. I close this hour with a parable. God created the world. The devil miffed
visited her to ask her what the meaning of this nonsense was. No reason, giggled Claude. Her fingers stuck in a finger trap. It's good, right? The trees in particular are good. They should work. But they work. God's garage is littered with carpenter's glue. Insulation juts from bare planks, and designs have been carved into its pink crust for the finger, and at the center is a vast rotating globe, blue and silent and terrible. The devil looks on it, as you would look on the Taj Mahal made of matchbooks that lines the floor of your roommate's bathroom. How long did this take you? Asks the devil. I'll never tell you, giggles Gunn. She fires a cat pistol at the devil with both hands and holds her nose with one finger as she jackknifes into the oceans that she has made, hidden somewhere within her creation. The devil shuffles and massages his weary temples and adjusts his tie clip. And he looks upon it all rotating like a fat blueberry with the juice dripping out of it, a slow, greasy leak all over the dirty garage floor. Someone must clean up the mess, he announces. And after changing into suitable trunks, he wades in. He enters the phenomenal world of time and binds himself to birth and death and reincarnation. One soul, the devil's soul. Chopping the trees, building the cities, inventing the novel and the plumb bob, all the time searching for God to hold her to account. The bell is ringing, so write this down for Wednesday. All of you, freshmen and seniors alike, you're all the devil. I look out over your ugly, beer-swilling fraternity faces and tan, swollen sorority breasts, and I shout, Satan! 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 This is all the midterm is Wednesday. Part two, the practice. Part two of the practice. The devil stepped away from the platform, tapped his lecture notes into order, and gave a lazy high sign to his prior incarnation in the front row. The devil, also sitting up in the front row, winked back at himself and turned to the girl sitting next to him, who was not the devil, who was God. He's obviously crazy, whispered the devil to God. God popped her gum and stared straight ahead. Her eyes didn't match. He had told her many times that this made her look exotic. She never listened. She didn't want to talk to him, the devil knew, because he had said that she looked hot in her turtleneck at the start of the semester. And one night he had walked her from the library under the burning campus streetlights waiting for an opportunity. And the devil had failed. He would give his chance. God stood up and left the auditorium. The devil masked around her and kept her within sight. She stepped out of the sociology building and pulled out the pack of palm oils that the devil had sold her earlier. The first pack of cigarettes he had ever sold to God. And the last. God stood against a brick outcropping and stupidly tried to spark it in the wind between the buildings. Got a light? Said the devil. His blonde pixie cut rustled past his ears and a black skirt with bubblegum trim tickled his chubby thighs. Yeah, said God. She held out the lighter that the devil had sold her earlier, and the devil cupped his hands around hers and cradled the flame to life. He inhaled and coughed. Thanks, he said. And he gave her a glitter glossy smile and went inside. Kept an eye on her, smoking a cigarette as he came and went over the next 15 minutes on his way to class or to his various offices around the campus, or on his way home to listen to records. God did not look at him. She kept her eyes on the branches of a tree that rose to the second floor of the sociology building, and no matter how many times the devil followed her mismatched eyes up, he couldn't see anything special about it. God let the cherry of her cigarette drop to the pavement and pushed off the wall with her satchel swinging at her side, an unrestrained breast that swayed, and the devil got an eyeful. A women's studies professor, on her way to her discussion section, a traffic officer at Dean Keaton University, another at Guadalupe 25th, every driver in every car, the jogger was saying to himself as he and his iPod cruised past the sorority hall on West Campus, the man who picked up bottles in the parking lot of her apartment building, which had 8 parking spaces, and the devil had parked illegally in every one. He slammed the door of his van as she approached the staircase of her building and gave her a beer. She climbed the stairs and went into her apartment. She closed the door behind her. The devil could no longer see her. He took solace in his memories. The time she was born was nice when he faced himself, giving birth to himself, and grunted, and in his mind twiddled his thumbs, and presto, something new. It was God who gathered around her, slapped her, injected her with vaccines, put her behind glass, and watched her, and loved her. The time he had given God a bath and had her stand up so he could scrub behind her knees, and he asked her where would she live when she grew up, and she said she would like to live anywhere else, someplace else, and sat back down in the water with a splash, and the devil laughed at how perfect she was for mismatched styles and her six-year-old sulk. And the time God cried when the devil put his hands under the blankets with the electricity and the infinite resilience of her. The time the devil came home and opened the closet door to hang up his red raincoat, and God was in there with the devil's silver striped tie around her perfect neck and around the silver bar that held up the hangers, and her pretty toes wrapped around the edge of a kitchen chair that she had dragged in here, tough little soldier, and the devil shouted her and grabbed her tight so she couldn't jump, and wrestled the tie loose, and it hung down the front of her, and her tears had stopped, and the devil's heart broke, because he knew that God would never let him see her cry anymore, that this was the last time that something behind her mismatched eyes had dried up, and she would never cry ever again. The devil took solace in his memories because somewhere behind that door, someplace else, she was doing something that did not include him, and he held on to the reins of the world and forced himself to concentrate on his presentation of sales figures to himself 12-fold and bored around the conference table, forced himself to pay attention to his hands on the rocket controls and to steady the sights on his rifle with himself in the crosshairs, forced himself to keep a grip on the whole great work of the world and not to let go, to drop it all and to come running to God's door and to hammer it down and to rush into her and fall at her knees and stare up into God's mismatched eyes and decide for sweet eons which one was better, the left or the right. And then the devil sat up and stared into his computer screen, a spark. God had posted an ad to Craigslist. Women for Men, 19. Young college girl, brains and beauty, looking for cheap fuck, DD3, preferable but not necessary. Can host, pick for pick. Seriously need to get fucked tonight, so be real. The devil was certainly real. He cheered and signed on to hundreds of different accounts and sent her 100 different pictures of his demonic penis or other penises that also belonged to him. In no time at all, he had checked his many email addresses and received pictures of her inside the apartment. Again, the devil drank her in, the skinny shoulders, the mole where her breast joined her ribs. He knew all of this. He looked behind her at the fake plants, the row of action figures, the corner of a blue couch with a green thumbtack in the wall that bore the weight of a pop star poster, a Georgia O'Keeffe print, or some damn thing that was no longer in the photo because one day she had gotten sick of it and torn it down, and only the thumbtack was left glinting behind her boring naked body. For the most part, the devil signed off of the Craigslist immediately to masturbate. One of him, however, called the phone number she had sent. "Hey," God said to the devil. He squeezed shut his eyes and felt his heart swell. "Hey, slut," he said, in rapture. "You looking for a fuck tonight?" he said. "Yes," said God, "that is what I said on my ad." "Yeah, all right," said the devil. "Then you come to the right stud, baby. You look at the picture I sent you?" "I did," said God. "And you like what you see?" said the devil. "Yes," said God. "It is a very impressive penis." "Yeah, you like that," said the devil. "That gets you hot, slut?" "Are you going to come over or not?" said God. "I really have to know so I can call someone else if I have to." 7, said the devil, and God agreed, and the devil hung up. He whiled away the time masturbating on his various family computers until he could clock out of his security guard job at 6:30. And he cruised up the highway, listening to himself sing Born to Run to himself, and he cursed at himself in the other cars, always blocking himself, always getting in his own way. At the corner store on 29th and Lacey's, he bought a pack of American Spirits and a box of ribs for his magnets. Good good luck tonight, said the devil to himself as he rang up the condoms, impressed. I already had good luck, you know what I mean? Probed the devil as he accepted the change, and they high-fived and smiled huge smiles as the devil went out the ringing door. His hands began to shake as he found a parking spot. 2 blocks away, he walked slowly, smoking an American Spirit down to the filter, and passed himself walking in the other direction and nodded encouragement to himself. Psyched himself up. At 7:45, he knocked on God's door. And here was God's door opening to him. God was wearing a black denim dress that buttoned up the front. Sorry I took so long, said the devil, flicking his filter down the stairs. It's fine, said God. Come on in. Her apartment was a shoebox. Her walls felt like they were pressing on his shoulders, and a kitchen counter wide enough for one person to stand comfortably. Cardboard boxes of books that had been stuffed under the stairs that led to a crushed-in little loft, a long desk littered with school papers, and a stack of textbooks still shrink-wrapped in plastic. A blue couch from the photo, and on a table at the end of it, the gold watch that the devil had sent her for her birthday. The air smelled like old mice, sweat, and insulation that burned somewhere behind the walls. This was how God was living now in the world she had made for herself. Nice crib, the devil made himself say, his heart going out to her. Do you want to just talk to me all night? God asked him, her mismatched eyes rolling over him. Oh, nah, baby, said the devil. Nah, I had something a little different in mind. God climbed the stairs, the devil. God's loft bedroom was exactly wide enough for her bed, a trash can and a stack of books wedged between her mattress and the wall. Along the baseboard, she must have taken every plate she owned and put a lit candle on every one. God sat on the bed and crossed her arms over her denim-wrapped breasts. The devil rocked on the balls of his feet. You got anything to drink? He said. Downstairs, said God. She was still staring at him. The devil pulled off his security shirt. We're going to do this or we're going to do this, he said, suddenly furious. It's up to you, God whispered, and the devil spread into the bed, and he put his rough hands on her crossed wrists, his left to her right, and his right to her left, and slowly he began to guide her arms apart, just to feel muscles and locked her elbows. The devil sat back, comfort, and what the fuck, bitch, said the devil. I'm sorry, said God, and suddenly her distressed eyes gave her knees. I'm not good at giving myself away. And how the devil felt for her, how he cried over the 1,000 romantic bottles he was reading just at that moment. Bullshit, said the devil. You're not good at giving yourself away? Why are you posting a website saying you need to get fucked and shit? Because I don't want to be afraid of people anymore, so God can understand it. You can understand something, yeah, said the devil. Overcome by his painful emotions. And he got up and started to stomp down the stairs. Wait, called God. The devil stopped descending. I'm fucking waiting, said the devil. God breathed. God breathed deep and let the breath flow all the way down her to the base of her spine as the devil watched and understood just what she was doing and approved. God let her arms unfold like a rose, and she unbuttoned the first button of her denim dress with the devil's eyes on her and the candles that burned all around her feet. And the devil came to her and put his fingers on the dimple on her neck that she was showing him, and he ran his hand down the lateral meridian of her and hooked each button with the bow of his finger and pulled it loose, and her skin against his hand was cold the way God's skin ought to be. For the first time in years, furious and burning, God's mismatched eyes on him the whole time, frozen open, breathing heavily and stepping without heat up in him. The devil finished and pulled out of God. He jogged in place, did a sloppy jumping jack, and just pulled his black track pants on again. I'm gonna get that drink, he said. God nodded, and now her mismatched eyes had closed. She rolled over from him. The devil went downstairs and found a half bottle of gin in the refrigerator. He poured himself a glass and he looked at the action figures on his shelf, every one of them broken, and he picked up the gold watch from the gift box on the table beside her couch and read again the note that he had written and folded into the envelope Please come home. I am sorry about everything. And he remembered, of course, what it had felt like to write it, but he was no longer so desperate anymore. And he chuckled quietly to himself as he pocketed the gold watch. He held it tight in the pocket of his black track pants, wanting to absorb every stray cell of skin that had come off on the metal when her fingers had accidentally brushed against it, because the devil knew, even as he wrapped it up and sent it to her, that God would never want to receive it from him. "You have a split," he announced, as he put his security shirt back on. "Thanks for being real." "My professor said something crazy today," God said, still facing away from him, her blanket resting under a defenseless celestial ass. "He said that everyone in the world was really the devil, including him. Can you imagine what that would feel like? I'm asking you, living in the world where everyone was the devil, except for you." "Yeah," said the devil, terrified that she had caught on. "I can imagine it," said God. And the devil felt his heart cracking with the gold watch in his pocket shining, and he wanted to kneel down beside her bed and let the candle flames burn him and confess everything, apologize for lying to her for all these years that she had hidden in her own reputation. "Yes, all of us, we're the devil. We're so sorry we let you down." But it would be too painful to his pride, of course, for what is the devil without pride? And instead, the devil slipped the watch into his track pants and left, stealing it from her without saying goodbye, too overwhelmed by God as she lay there naked with her mismatched eyes, unable to cry because something had dried up behind them long ago, and staring at a wall as she did. But the devil would find other consolations. He would continue to run the world, and he would sell her watch to himself so every devil could have a little piece of her, and they would leave her alone in her room lined with candles where the devil couldn't see what she was doing until the day when he would miss her again, and he would break down the door of her apartment, all of him, and they would swarm in and they would pull her down and they would make God give them an account of herself at last, and God would give them nothing ever again. Thank you. That's almost it for tonight. Except I think we have one more transmission we gotta receive.